You're listening to Subsound Radio. We bring you streaming and live broadcasting from the capital. This is the El Arpa Podcast. Welcome to the El Arpa Podcast. This is your host, Enda, speaking, and the co-host, senior co-host, that is, Maria. How are you doing?
Why senior?
Because you had the most experience and panache behind the microphone.
I'm doing very well, thank you.
So I defer to you on all things podcasting. So we were fiddling around, well, you more so than me, with the editing of our 3D video. You've really gotten to grips with the technical side of our endeavors, haven't you?
More or less.
So how long did it take to edit this video?
Like days and days.
We're using a 3D camera. What, can you describe to our listeners what our initial challenges were with this type of equipment?
No, it's just really difficult to get. It's basically one lens that works like a sphere, and then you have to try and get things straight and all around and not look distorted and stuff like that.
Exactly. We had a bad case of fisheye for most of our earlier stuff. It works in conjunction with the iPad. Is the iPad essential for remote control?
I think we discovered that was a little bit confusing.
Yeah, well, the key was, so, the breakthrough was the tripod. Exactly. So when you have it on a tripod, you get a more
basics.
Yeah, you get a more global view of everything, no?
Definitely, yeah.
Okay, so do you think 3D cameras are going to become more in vogue in...
Well, I think when we save a little bit, or we get a lot of students that can pay for a better camera, then...
Exactly. Well, I think we're going to stay... Yeah. Well, we'll use the 3D camera and the traditional Nikon camera as well. We'll dabble. The advantage is that we can edit this ourselves, so it's cheaper.
Yes.
It's free to edit. How do you learn this stuff?
Just, you know, trial and error.
Trial and error on an Adobe...
Yeah, sort of, well, trial copy.
Is it easy to use?
No.
Okay.
It's really tricky.
Really? Okay. Practice makes perfect, of course.
Yeah, like anything.
So we're going to go on with the next part of the show in just a moment. Before we do, I've been listening a lot to the Bill Burr podcast. So after you're done with ours, head over there. Of course, we're still listening to Joe Rooney's Potter Rooney, which is maintaining its consistently high levels and in-depth interviews. And of course, if any other podcasts, feel free to suggest to us what to listen to. We can learn from the masters as well. But now, of course, it's time for the obligatory...
interlude.
Exactly. Welcome back to part two of the show. We're going to be talking about a photo exhibition that we went to in the Casa Arabe, which is near the center of Madrid, tying in with a very topical issue at the moment, which is Syria. Syria is in our newspapers every day for the last, I don't know, a couple of months, would you say, or even longer?
Well, I would say for 5 years.
Since the war began, but it's been intensifying recently. Newspaper headlines today. Today's the 24th, isn't it? So Russia are being accused of committing war crimes in Syria and the United Nations. Very tense debates in the Security Council and in the chambers of the General Assembly as well. You've been following this news story for the last few months as well, I take it.
Yeah.
Have there been any recent developments that have caught your eye?
I mean, it just comes on and off, I think, the news. It looks like it's constantly happening, but every so often there's just some reports, obviously by charities, you know, like Médecins Sans Frontières, for example. I just
And Save the Children as well, which is which we'll get into in more detail in just a moment, because you have some personal insight into that, you know, because a lot of child casualties in the war, and you'd be explaining to us why that happens, or your kind of personal take on that. Before we get into this, we're in the Casa Arabe, as I mentioned, which is a cultural space for all things from the Arabic world, close to Retiro Park, and it's part of a chain of houses in Madrid. We were in Casa de America last week looking at movie posters from such luminaries as Clint Eastwood, Kirk Douglas, Spartacus, From Russia with Love, that Sean Connery, James Bond movie, which is the second one in the series, I think. Yes, it is the second one in the series. And a lot of those posters were made by Spanish artists, so it's quite interesting, no? And there's a Casa, is it Asian or is it a China one?
I don't know, you told me about that. So oh, yeah. We'll have to pay a visit.
Exactly, and there's a Casa Israel as well. So I'm not sure if they're...
Well,
we'll
be doing a tour of all the
casas. Exactly, definitely, for sure. No, it's fantastic. It's a great cultural resource. And they're usually free to enter as well. And just these huge exhibition centers full of things which are always captivating. And like I mentioned, we went to the Casa de Arabe last week. We saw a photo exhibition. The photographer, do you remember her name?
Her name was Carol, I think, because it surprised me, because it's not a very sort of like...
And what's her story? What's the background?
Well, she just basically decided to... She was very interested in photography from a young age, and then as things started happening in Syria, she just felt the need to get out and record what was happening, not just the big events, which I think this is the key of the exhibition, that it didn't just focus on like the big things that happened whenever there was a bomb or anything like that, but also on like daily life of people in between those things that are the ones that are in the news.
And there's a lot of things happening in this exhibition. First of all, it's a document of a refugee. So she's living in Spain now. Yeah, we had a refugee. Well, you call it a crisis. It's, I think, it betrays how you view it, or the refugee situation that's happening in Europe. It ties into the Syrian war, obviously, which is what's provoking this. And also, as well, it documents kind of photorealism and photojournalism, which is celebrated every year in Madrid. Sure, we went to an exhibition last year of world press photography, you know. So this is again current events coming to the fore through photography. So a lot of different elements in play. What was your initial takeaway, or your initial is wrong, it's been a week now, so what's your concrete takeaway from having it percolate through your mind for the last few days?
It was a very short exhibition, but I think it was just enough to, you know, get you thinking. As I said, I think the most interesting thing was the portrayal of like people just like trying to live their ordinary lives while the conflict is going on. I think I mentioned to you one of the things that struck me the most was photos of people that were smiling. That we're so bombarded in a way by images of like tragedy that we sort of like become like numb or like immune to them. And then, funnily enough, like when you've seen like quite a few pictures of like people, you know, devastating and really, really upset and angry even, and then you come across somebody who's just smiling, like, you know, looking out of a window, whatever, it sort of like highlights more the drama of the rest of the situation.
Where do smiles come from? Is it a familiarity with the carnage that they can rise above it, or is it just black humor that you can find possibly in lots of situations where there's this tension? Because it's something that you could find in Belfast as well during the dark days of the sectarian violence. You could see this humor emerging in some parts. Is this like some kind of, you know, black humor, or is it just genuine friendliness? Where is it coming from?
I think it's a mixture of things. It's an Arabic characteristic, I would say, to be like really, really friendly towards strangers, and you know, and kind of like keeping a good mood and just being cheerful. It's kind of like seen as part of like manners, I think.
Is that heightened by the devastation, because there's so many bomb holes and craters that people are almost amping up that aspect of
I think culture. That happens too. And as you were saying, like in case of I think there's always like a characteristic of like human beings to like try and rise over a really like desperate situation, because otherwise there's just no other reason to keep going, you know. So I think I would say it's a mixture of some like cultural features and also, I don't know, like when you've got nothing to lose, you know, and you've lost everything already, it's kind of like the only way is up, I guess. So.
Exactly. And this girl, she is responsible for the images presented on the walls. She mentions in the exhibition that her body is in Spain, but her heart and her dreams and her mind and everything are still in Syria. Mm-hmm. What do you think her principal motivation was in documenting this? Because in some ways, she's, you know, a bomb has just exploded and she's rushed out to document it, and she's not sure if she's going to come home and see her mother. She's going to empty houses, you know, being affected by finding blood in the kitchen sink, for example, or bathroom sink, and seeing posters or photos of people that may or may not be alive anymore. So in some sense, she is reacting in a very peculiar but also very specific way to this. Was there anything in the exhibition that shed some light on her motivations in particular?
I think it was actually quite interesting, because one of the things that she said is that when she goes out to document this explosion, she's about to take a picture of a girl who's like covered in rubble and dust, and then when like that girl calls out and she realizes that it's actually one of her best friends. I think, I don't know, I might be wrong, but I didn't get the impression that she was taking those pictures to show to the world, but that she was rather taking those pictures to kind of like make sense of what was happening and keeping a record of, like, as I was saying before, the daily life of those people and what those people were encountering, and almost like showing violence and all the distress as a part of people's daily life, you know.
Do you think people watching or looking at these images will be affected by them in a deeper way than browsing through the newspaper and then moving on with the rest of your day? Do you think these images are powerful enough to maybe stay with people, or at least some people?
Well, I think they are, because as I was saying, some of them were looking at other aspects. There was even one that was showing, you know, bits of glass, and it was actually quite artistic and quite nice. And I know it sounds awful, you know, but it's sort of like, I think it's important to do things that prompt people to look at things in from other angles, because by looking at something that seems artistic or something that, as I was saying before, somebody smiling in the middle of like such tragedy, it kind of like shakes you up a little bit, like gets you out of that numbness of just seeing like tragedy, which sadly we're like so used to it that we kind of like don't really feel it anymore.
And Aleppo as well is a word that's in newspapers quite a lot, no?
Yes, it is. Yes, so. Even though there's been some instances of, well, famously, that American politician that was asked
the third candidate in the presidential election.
Yeah.
Well, my point is that it's a faraway place that people wouldn't have heard of before. But with the images, and particularly with, there's a video, which is some video footage, and also a composite of her different photographs as well, showing empty houses and you know, things that people can relate to as well. So I think it's easier to put yourself in the place of the victims in that sense, you know, if you're looking at personal things being taken away from you or being disrupted in such a very dramatic and violent fashion.
He's describing one day as well, which I think also helps, because he's describing the moment, like the time it was and how
and things it's just developed. One day out of many.
Yeah, exactly.
Know? So, you know, if you think that day is particularly horrible, it's just another day in a succession of awful events. You've been to the region, which you've discussed before on the podcast. So you did you your local knowledge.
Well, I wouldn't go that far.
But you were able to see things probably differently to most people, based on your experiences.
I mean, I've only really been to Egypt, but I've spent quite a bit of time there, like living sort of like with people that didn't have very much. Yeah, of course, like you can see the similarities and how, you know, despite not having a conflict, you know, there are still people are living in a lot of poverty. So I think when you look at the images from Syria, it's like a mixture of people that actually like were that poor to start with, and then, you know, other people that were used to a similar life. Like we hear stories every day of people that have come over, for example, that are like what we would consider middle class or even wealthy people over there, and now they've lost everything.
Exactly. Yeah.
So I think in that sense, it's just like more angles to look at of how, you know, it's not useful to simplify what happens and to whom, and, you know,
exactly
who's subject to it and who's guilty for it and so on.
Well, exactly. I think, you know, not that it should need humanizing, the refugee crisis, but it clearly does, because some people view it in such a negative or warped way. You know, it does put a human face on it. And what struck me from the photographs and the images, and I said to you on the day as well, is a lot of the images feature a particular act or event, like the aftermath of a bomb or whatever. And, you know, people throwing their hands up in the air. It's an image caught just for that second, or just a general feeling of powerlessness, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so these people are victims of not just bombs and violence, but of circumstances and awful misfortune, you know, and it's not easy for them to have to come over to this side of the world, for example. And the other images that we saw previously in another exhibition that we also covered in this podcast, of them being kind of just stuck behind these borders in some Eastern European countries as well. So that feeling of powerlessness follows them, you know, it starts in Syria and follows them through their journey. As well. So, you know, if you're not moved by that, it's you know, I mean, I think you have to look at it yourself, because this is because, you know, we're living in a time now as well where Bruce Springsteen called him a moron. He's been very kind, but Donald Trump saying in his first few moments of the presidency he would remove a lot of immigrants from the United States of America, and have also a lot of states and governors and him himself have been very vocal against the refugees from Syria.
Disgusting use of images as well.
Yeah, because you know, because allegedly one of the Paris attackers pretended to be a refugee, for example.
Yeah.
And you know, but a lot of their discourse and rhetoric is very up in the air. It's not factual. It's given away to emotion. Kind of hateful emotion, you know. And what we've seen in this exhibition is actually journalistic documentation, and there is emotion there, but it's also based on fact, you know.
And it's quite peaceful as well.
And it's quite peaceful.
Even the video that you were talking about, that is like so, you know, like really hard, like tough to watch, but then she's narrating in a very calm way. Yeah. You know,
and you know, the vast majority of these people aren't terrorists, basically. Well, you know?
Yeah, that's all.
So it's it's a very important exhibition. No, also as well, the photojournalistic aspect of it really intrigues me as well. I'm not sure if you're familiar with a poem by Carol Ann Duffy, which is about a war photographer. If you've ever seen Before Sunset as well, Julie Delpy's character mentions she's going out with a war photographer, and how, well, the stereotype is that they're cold and detached, and they have to be, you know. But this girl obviously isn't cold or detached. She's very involved and very passionate about it, you know, but you still see these images of a startling reality, and, you know, very well taken shots as well of the different facets of this conflict. So, I don't know, did you have this perception of photographers of conflicts before? Or maybe war journalists, you know, did you have this kind of preconception of them before, like a negative one? Has it been changed, or did you have any conception at all before seeing this exhibition?
No, I think, well, I read a very interesting book by Lindsay Adario, who's also a photojournalist and has covered Syria and many, many other conflicts. It was quite interesting what she said, because it was slightly different from what I was saying about this exhibition, that for her it was like a way of seeing the world, you know, just putting some sort of like boundary between her and reality. So she was documenting things, but it was kind of like, yeah, she became a bit numb. It was kind of like a way of showing those things to the world and at the same time protecting herself from them. And in this exhibition, I didn't feel that way. I just felt that it was a bit the opposite. Like, you know, the artist had the need to somehow document what was happening around her to her people. So I think it was a little bit different.
And in the fullness of time, we might see as well that you know, Syria might not look the way it did look. It might change completely, you know. So her photographs and images will document a city, how it looked before it changed. You know, because there might be regeneration. There might be in time. There might be a complete redevelopment of the devastated areas. You know, so it could change completely as well in the future. But who knows what's going to happen in that corner of the world. So anything else you want to mention?
No, I think it's an exhibition worth seeing, and I think as well anything that keeps the subject in the news is important, because as we were saying before, we just become accustomed to it, and it's already been 5 years, you know, and it's easy to switch on and off for us. But well, they were talking the other day about Lost Generation, how like there's a lot of kids that haven't been to school and won't really be able to do anything.
And a lot of them have been caught up as victims as well. And you mentioned as well, even in Egypt, if you take a photograph, there's always kids kind of hanging around.
Yes, there's always kids everywhere.
Yeah, so no surprises why they get caught up sometimes. Okay, well, if you're in Madrid, it's the Casa Arabe, which is Metro Retiro near the center of Madrid. It's running for the next few weeks, possibly longer as well. You can check it out online. But for now, that's the end of part two. You are such a card. Okay, so you've just listened to the majority of the show. Anything to wrap up before we go our merry way?
No, then you had something to tell us.
I've been getting into a lot of movies recently. Old style movies from the 40s and 50s. David Lean cut his teeth with a few early British pictures as well before his epics of the 60s. And later on, so of Dr. Zhivago, Lawrence Arabia fame, did some kind of more kitchen sink kind of dramas. So I urge you to check those out as well. LARPA news, we're heating up now. It's October, so we're basically booked up now with all our classes.
Yes. Yeah.
Do you have any free space in your schedule?
Here and there, but not that much. Depends on the offer.
Yeah, because you're charging quite a lot for your newest class, aren't you? Extortionate, so would say. Okay, well, you know how to get in touch with us at LARPA1 is our Twitter handle. We're no longer on Facebook because it's the past. And LARPA.net is the website. So this is Enda from the LARPA podcast saying goodbye.
And Maria saying bye.
You're listening to Subsound Radio. We bring you streaming and live broadcasting from the capital. This is the LARPA podcast.